What is cracking, Hope Nation? It's your friendly neighborhood Kevin Hines, and I couldn't be more excited today, ladies and gentlemen, family and friends, colleagues around the world. We're in 60 countries, I think, in this podcast so far, something like that. Today's guest is a great one, a man I sincerely look up to. He's got big goals and dreams, and he shares his blueprint to get them with the world. Josh Koznick is a provider. He's a recruiter. The man's a teacher and one heck of a leader. He is, in fact, the type A alpha male that loves to compete, drink bourbon, and smoke cigars. However, he never shies away from sharing his vulnerable side. Josh is very passionate about men's mental health, finding healing, talking about emotions, and supporting other men. He will never stop advocating for this as far as life takes him until he dies of natural causes. One very important thing about him is that his faith drives him to persevere through pain and suffering, because he knows on the other side of those struggles is everything he's ever dreamed of and everything he was born and meant to be. Josh's story is meant to inspire and build the bridge you need in order to cross over your own struggles and achieve the legacy you envision for yourself, fulfilled with your purpose, of course, and become the leader you need to be, all the while feeling joy and satisfaction throughout your journey of growth. Life is about more than money, says Josh. It's more than business and materialistic things. It's about the generosity of spirit, authenticity, and becoming the best version of yourself. Josh is one heck of an incredible man and a powerhouse of a story to tell he has. Please welcome to the Hindsights podcast, a man I look up to, a man who continuously gives back with no end in sight to his generosity, Josh Koznick. We are so glad to have you on the show. So happy you could join us on this powerful episode of the Hindsights podcast. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
Man, I am great. I'm going to bring you around, Kevin, with all your traveling to do my, be my hype man and intro me everywhere I go. I love it.
That's a deal. Let's do it. Let's make it happen. I love it. I love it. Josh, let's dive right in if we can. And let's go all the way back to the very beginning. Back, as I always say, as my father, Patrick Kevin Hines, always says, into the rearview mirror and the time you were born. Where were you born and what was your upbringing like?
So I was born in Ottawa, Illinois, not to be confused with Ottawa, Canada. And it's a small rural town on the Illinois River where my parents fell in love in high school. And I was born there, but never lived there. So my father moved us quickly down to central Illinois, Peoria, Champaign. And before high school, I was moved up to Madison, Wisconsin, which is now where I call home. And I have for the last, it's 30 years now.
Incredible.
So been in Madison the 30 years, and growing up, you know, it was interesting. My family, my grandparents, all very blue collar, very blue collar. In fact, my dad, one of his first jobs providing for me as a young child was, I don't even know what you call it, like a train switchman, jumping on and off trains and switching cars and cutting glass were his two jobs before he found the insurance and financial services industry. So I got to see our family go from, you know, lower class to upper middle class throughout my childhood and see my father's hard work really pay off. And it really laid the groundwork for myself. And I'm the oldest of four, so my siblings as well.
Incredible. Watch your dad go from maybe a little bit of struggle to finding some success. And then how did that build you as a young man?
Well, it taught me a lot through hard work. And it also, you know, it was interesting. So looking back, I ended up going into the financial industry as well for a long time before I started off on this leadership path. And it was interesting to note that I saw a lot of friends that I went to high school with that also grew up upper middle class. They either went one of two ways. One is they became lazy and complacent and really kind of rested on their laurels of the silver spoon, if you will. And the other way is the way I chose, which is I'm such a competitor. I wanted to be better than my dad, and not in like a bad way. Like I just felt like the groundwork was so well laid for me to screw it up would be a slap in the face to him. And so I just continue to be on that path to forge my own trail, but also to continue to that legacy to my kids and hopefully to their kids and teach them the proper lessons and values to continue to grow. And, you know, it's interesting, like my dad never put it out to us to say, hey, you know, he never put anything on us other than to raise us right. And my mom is a big part of this, probably even a bigger part of raising us as my dad was building the empire. But to, they never put on us that you have to do this or you have to do that. We all forged our own paths. In fact, me, even as a college dropout, and I forged my own path. They didn't tell me or chastise me or berate me because I chose that. They just said, well, you better get to work. And I did.
It's time to get to work. It's time to move forward. Absolutely. You built your own path through entrepreneurship. Can you tell us that journey and that path and what that looked like?
Yeah. So I was actually, my first sales job was when I was 16 years old. And I was at Circuit City, and I actually just talked about this on my podcast the other day. It'll come out next week. And I was selling pagers and cell phones. And I age myself a little bit there because, you know, anyone younger listening to this podcast is going to be like, what's a pager? And anyhow, so that's where I started. But I graduated to Best Buy. Circuit City was kind of falling by the wayside. And I was working salary as a sales manager and making good money for a 23, 24-year-old. But I was running a top three store in the country, and I knew other sales managers getting paid more than I was. So I kind of bashfully asked for a raise. And they told me no. And that same week, someone called me from the financial service industry that happened to work for my father, but my father did not put him up to it. He just happened to get my name and call on me. And I sat back in the chair that same week and I go, that's what I should be doing. I didn't want anyone in control of what I was worth. And so I tucked my tail between my legs, called my father and said, hey, I want to make this change. I want to do that. And wow. There, at 24 years old, I jumped into the financial service industry and never looked back. Built a beautiful practice, grew it over to 100 million in assets under management as a personal practice, sold that at age 36. Bought and took over the firm my dad had built. That was a Fortune 100 company's choice, not his. Not that he would have done anything different, but I always like to point that out because it wasn't nepotism.
Yeah,
I had earned that. And yeah. So I buy this firm and I build it to 115 advisors. We have 250 employees and $6 billion under management. And I sold that 2 years ago. But it's it was such a journey of growth and leadership. I found in that path that I was finding more joy in watching and helping others develop themselves and me being a part of that development path than I was in building my own practice. So that's why I pursued the leadership path as a part of it. But this entrepreneurial spirit and blood is in me, and I continue to build things and help others build things in the process.
Talk about your leadership journey and what that means to you and what it means when you're serving others and helping them grow. What does that look like?
Yeah. So I think that I study John Maxwell a lot. I think he's like the OG of leadership, really. Well, maybe not. He wouldn't even say that. Like, he's probably the spiritual OG of leadership. Obviously, Jim Rohn and some others in the past, Napoleon Hill, have taught us a lot about leadership in the past years. But for me, Maxwell talks about influence. Leadership is nothing more than influence. But I also think that leadership is one of the greatest traits of leadership is humility. And that's something that I had to learn growing up over the years, is that it's not something that I was an inherent trait in me, being a competitive type A male. Humility and vulnerability were not something that I was naturally gifted with. And I'm not sure that anyone is just naturally gifted with those things. I think it's a human condition to continue to learn and grow. And particularly if you're in a sales or entrepreneurial industry, narcissism runs rampant. So it's one of those things where if you can grow that humility, if you can grow that vulnerability, the impact you can have on others is immense. So how I saw this was, okay, I could probably, at the peak of my financial advisory career, I could serve about 500 families. Well, I could extend it further, but I wouldn't be doing it really, really well. And I like to do things really well. However, if I recruit and develop other advisors underneath me and they serve 500 families, now my impact is exponential. And so my whole thing, I sign off every text, every email, everything with Inspire and Impact. And that's my whole thing, is I want to inspire and impact as many people as I can. And that's how I saw leadership for me, is if I can impart influence, my influence, impart my wisdom and the lessons that I've learned and the lumps I've taken throughout my life, if I can impart it on them and they can go and have that ripple effect to the people that they lead, it just expands on my impact. And that's what I want to leave in this world, as big of a positive impact as possible.
The ripple effect is so key to giving back to community and how you came up and where you came from. Our film Suicide, The Ripple Effect, was just that, about the ripple effects of suicide, the ripple effect of depression and brain pain, both in the hopeful aspect and the negative aspect, the ripple effect of a death, but the ripple effect of people like you and me who give others hope to continue to do good, to succeed, to thrive. So I can totally relate to that. Josh, have you, to switch tracks here for just a moment, and maybe for the rest of the podcast, I'd love to know if you're willing to share, have you ever struggled with your own brain and mental health? And if so, what was that journey like?
Yeah. So interestingly enough, so I've never, I won't say, I should say there was one time I had a thought, but I've never been diagnosed with depression. I have had depressive thoughts. And in fact, there's two times in my life that I've lost my identity. And now I'm very resolute in that, as you know, God will continue to throw the same challenges at us until we fully learn that lesson. And so when I dropped out of school, it was because I stopped playing football. Mm. I went to college to play football, not to go to college, which was probably the wrong intention looking back, right? Wrong intention to go to college, but that was my way into college, is I wanted to continue playing football. When I stopped playing football, I lost my identity, because that's all that I had ever known. And I went into kind of a depressive state. Never any suicidal thoughts, but I was certainly not the same human being. Fast forward to 2.5 years ago, the second time I lose my identity, I had a narcissistic advisor that sued me for discrimination. And therefore, that Fortune 100 company that I represented and owned my firm through terminated me. And they bought me out after that. He was playing the political card, the BLM movement, all that stuff was very rampant 2.5 years ago. You know, it was just one of those things where I was stabbed in the back by him. This is someone I recruited, mentored, developed, gave $10,000 worth of custom suits out of my own closet to. I mean, someone I never would have had any notion of that. And it's just interesting that said, sometimes you, no matter how good you can be, there will be people that will try and attack you. No matter how successful you become, no matter how big of an impact you have, there will be people that with jealousy and they will try to attack you. And so when that was taken away from me, that was the hardest time I had gone through personally. I lost everything: my title, my position, my business, all my people, what I thought was my legacy. Right? It really wasn't, but. All the awards didn't matter. All the trophies didn't matter. All the people that I had recruited and helped, like those, that's where my legacy lied, is they haven't forgotten me and the opportunity that I gave them. But in that time frame, what I came to was going through the 7 stages of grief, really, was I can't place, and you can't place, and anyone can't place our identity in anything earthly. I finally learned the lesson, is that my identity is found in God and him alone, and what he thinks about me, not what, you know, this person that accused me of racism, not what this person that is jealous of this, or not what the, if this person calls me an a-hole or whatever, like, that's not who I am. It's who he says I am. Mm-hmm. And so I had to get resolute with that. And then as I processed, not only was I able to process the grief and the time for, so I had this negotiation back and forth with the company for like 6 months. And it was beautiful in a way that I got to spend summer with my kids. And I had actually, in that time frame, was like, yeah, I'll spend the summer with my kids. When else would I ever get that time back? But as soon as I got them back into school, I am going batshit. I am totally discontent. I'm grieving. I'm figuring out who the heck I am, what I'm going to do now. Am I going to stay in the industry? And negotiating this exit with a company that just stabbed me in the back. That I had loved, that I had spent my entire career building, you know, bleeding, sweating for. And so I'm processing all this, but it also gave me time to make an inflection point in my life become an inspection point in my life. And I always, I state that very clearly and purposefully, because oftentimes we miss these inflection points in our life. We don't inspect them. We don't like what, because at any juncture of our life, like what part of the problem is me is a question I always ask of myself. What happened to me? Sucked. And what that person did to me that caused the situation to happen was absolutely awful. And I wouldn't wish it upon anyone. That being said, God had a bigger plan for me and I had to lean into that. So I was able to vision about the future and vision about what I wanted to do. I'd create a list of like, hey, what did I love about my previous job and what I was doing and how I was leading? And what did I hate? And then I asked the question, okay, what if I could just create a world that I just focused on the stuff that I loved and eliminate or at least mitigate some of the stuff that I really didn't like compliance, HR, egotistical advisors. And I could just create a world that I just focused on the stuff that I loved. And so I started leaning on that and getting excitement about that. And then dreams happen. I started putting this dream out into the world. And some just amazing things happened with me having this property that I'm sitting in now and being able to bring people out here and disconnect from their computer screens and fluorescent lights and really dive into themselves to become better human beings and go back out to the world. So I know there's a long story around, but those are the two times that I really lost who I was. And in them, you know, I said I had a passing thought, but I just couldn't do it to my family or anyone else. And so it's one of those things where I don't take it lightly, the brain health and all the things that I was able to. I'll tell you, one of the things I really did well was focus on my mental health, my brain health during that time, because it was not in a good spot. And because of that negotiation where I couldn't work, couldn't focus on anything else, it allowed me that time to pause and inspect and make sure that I was right.
Mm. So you said briefly you had a passing thought potentially of suicide, but you wouldn't go through with it and you never attempted or anything like that. But I know about you and your family, you've lost a loved one to suicide. And if you're willing, Josh, could you talk about that, what that did to your family and how you all cope today with that loss?
Yeah. Thanks. Well, that's a great follow-up question, because that's the reason I didn't. It was just a thought and not an ideation. Because the night that I was driving home to Indiana, or driving my wife to her home in Indiana, when my father-in-law took his life that day, I made a promise to her that I would never do that. And so that's why when I had that passing thought, it was just a passing thought. And not an ideation, and it didn't go any further.
You controlled it in the moment. You controlled it in the moment, and you took a step forward to make sure that you were safe and that your family was protected, which is
So to bring that further, as I was preparing, and this is when I still owned my firm. This was back in 2018. We just 6 years, February 7th, that we lost Tom. And I was preparing to take my top producers, my financial advisors and their spouses to Mexico. And my phone was blowing up. And Tex and my wife, we had a newborn essentially at that point. She's breastfeeding him and trying to get him down as my mom was coming over to watch the kids while we were gone. I'm taking 50 people down to Mexico and my COO is on her way to our house. I'm just kind of getting everything together. And I finally get to my phone and my wife's aunt is on the other end, and she goes, "Josh, don't get on the plane." And I said, what's going on? And she said, "Tom shot himself." And Tom was the closest, he would hate that I say this, but he was the closest thing to Jesus I saw walking this earth. That's the type of man he was. Very spiritual, immensely generous, another entrepreneur that gave with all his heart. In fact, there's so many, you know, the Bible talks about don't let your left hand see what your right hand is giving. I'm not saying that exactly correctly, but I think most people will get what I'm saying is he gave without anyone knowing. In fact, we found out how much he was giving away after his passing. And not to their detriment, by the way, that he was just a generous person. He lost his battle with brain pain after going through a very stressful situation with his business. He'd already beaten cancer. He'd beaten ulcerative colitis, all these different stomach things that he had going on. And the stress finally got to him with his the situation they had going on with his business and a business partner that was stealing money from him. We didn't know how bad it was. At least Jenna and I didn't. Oh, actually, my mother-in-law is the only one that knew how bad it was. And it was amazing to see the impact that he had, that the service line to see him at the wake was 4 hours long. And that's just the impact that he left in this world. And we miss him every day. And my mother-in-law still battles, and she's sharing his story and continually trying to get better. We were on the podcast, I had you on last year, and we and my family shared our story publicly for the first time that same month in May for Mental Health Awareness Month. And it's been painful. A lot of the his brothers haven't been great to my mother-in-law since then. There's been other family members that have, shown their true colors. It was almost like he was the glue that held the family together. And as soon as he was gone, shit just went to hell in a handbasket. But yeah, it changed our trajectory forever. Me having to tell my girls that their grandpa was gone. We still haven't told. Well, I should correct that. They heard my podcast last year, so the oldest one knows. But at the time, we had told them that his heart stopped, which in part was accurate because he shot himself in the chest. But we couldn't bear kind of ruining their innocence at that point.
Yeah. So it's such a painful thing to lose anyone you love to suicide. And suicide is truly like no other death in the world.
Truly.
It's like no other kind of passing, because it's both a self-deletion and a self-murder. It's so complex, and people who die by suicide or die of suicide, just like anyone would die of any other organ disease. They're dying from brain pain. They're dying from lethal emotional pain, and whatever circumstances lead to that lethal emotional pain, outside extenuating circumstances like finances or trouble in families or whatever the situation may be. One of the things we know today, certainly as someone who survived a very serious suicide attempt, is that when we unburden ourselves, when we tell the truth about our pain to just one person willing to empathize, that pain shared can become a pain halved.
Mm.
And I think about all the people in the world, and I hope some people that are watching, viewing, or subscribing or listening can hear this. We think about all the people in the world, the millions of people that constantly live with suicidal ideation. If they just took a step back and recognize that their thoughts didn't have to become their actions, they could simply be their thoughts. If they're dangerous or self-violent, they could get past that suicidal ideation to the other side, which is where hope exists. And that hope may not be an action plan, but if you work hard enough toward a goal of having hope, if you walk far enough to reach it, it will be there. And you have to build it over time. I think people who talk about hope in a way that is propagandized, like it's always hopeful, I think that's too much. But I think if you talk about the people who struggle deeply with brain pain, that they can get to a better place. Mm-hmm. And hell, if I can do it, so can you. I think that's a better way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Josh, as someone and a part of a family that's lost someone so close to suicide, what do you recommend for someone who has just maybe in the last few months or few years lost a loved one to suicide? What do you recommend they do as a family in the wake of such a traumatic experience?
Well, you said suicide is such a complex death. I will say that the grief is so complex as well.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't go away. And I just had a good buddy who's in a Bible study of mine lose one of his good friends to suicide. And he was, he had just talked to him a few days earlier, and he didn't know how bad he was. And he was going through all the what ifs, which all of us go through. I'll tell briefly that on Christmas, before we lost Tom, I was in the laundry room with him with the door shut for 2 hours. And you might say, well, why in the laundry room? Like, well, he didn't want Jenna, my wife, or Pam, his wife, to hear what we were talking about. And here I am trying to help him solve a business problem, not knowing that he was in such bad brain pain, emotional pain. And so I had all the what ifs around that conversation when just a month and a week later, you know, I get that phone call. And so I know that grief, and I know that, you know, Pam, his wife, my mother-in-law, she thinks about it all the time, about the what ifs and what she could have done differently. And what I'll tell you is that they're just unhealthy. All the what ifs are unhealthy for you and your mental health, brain health. And so seeking a therapist is one way. Being around strong people, not only people that can relate, that have gone through it, but also just strong, positive people that breathe life into your life. And so whether that's a Bible study for you, whether it's a grief circle, whether it's great friends, because I'll tell you that for those that haven't lost anyone close to them before, or specifically in the suicide arena, like, they don't understand that 6 years later, why Pam or myself or Jenna or Jesse, her other daughter, can't get past it. Like, why we can't just move on, or why our grief is still as strong as it. Well, first of all, we grieve so hard because we loved so hard, right? So anyone that truly loved whoever they lost, whether it was to cancer or suicide, it's, you grieve hard because you love hard. And so whether that, like, but sometimes people use the platitude of, you know, time heals all wounds. It doesn't. It doesn't. And so that platitude's just bullshit. So now here's one thing I'll say that when people try to say nice things like that, because I think most people are well-intentioned when they say those words. But one of the things that the funeral director, and by the way, kudos to funeral directors. I think they're what's probably one of the most underrated and underappreciated jobs in the world. This guy was so good. He sat with us, and not only was he a friend of the family because it was a very small town, but he sat with us and talked about, just so you guys know, there's going to be people that'll say things that are off-putting to you guys during this time. I just want you to know, if they showed up, they care. Mm. So pay attention to the people that show up for you. Those are the ones that care. They may not say the right things because they don't have the, like, who has the right words, really? There are no right words. Like, we could search for all the right words to put in a Hallmark card, or find a Hallmark card even. Like, they won't be the right words. So it's a matter of, do they show up and do they care? So for anyone out there that's grieving or is going to grieve in the future, as we all will, find the people that are showing up for you in your life, that are there for you without expectation. And find people that you can pour into as well. Because I think also giving back, like, the one of the things that's really helped my mother-in-law, because she found him, she still has all the PTSD from all that different stuff, is she's trying to be of service. And what's the first thing as you get yourself clean in AA or any of those other programs? Yeah. They tell you to go be of service. They tell you to, they get you into a mentorship role. Because if you're being of service, you feel of value, that your life's worth living. And so that's what I would really say, is figure out a way to be of service, as well as get the support you need on those days that aren't so good.
Being of service is such a key point to make, Josh. People that volunteer for a cause, a good cause outside of themselves, are apparently 63% more mentally healthy than those that do not. So you're talking about giving back in every way, shape, and form that you see fit that works with your lifestyle. And I firmly believe that giving back is the true receiving, and that it is all of our true purposes, is to give back to those we know, those we love, those we don't know from Adam, and those we don't even like. What we are not meant to do on this earth is hurt each other with our words or actions. Yet that has been forgotten over the course of history. And it happens all over the world in some of our own homes. And I think that if, you know, just to kind of even broaden the horizon of what we're talking about. There are so many homes as I travel the world and go to high schools and grade schools all over the world. And I meet these students that, that are in so much pain, brain pain, and they're being bullied at school and they're being abused and neglected at home. Mm. And so they don't like going to school and they don't like going home. And that's the most common theme I find in this country and around the world, but it, specifically in this country, is that when I go and I talk to a high school, the majority of the kids who approach me afterwards have one or both of those things going on. And it breaks my heart. And I just want to implore and express to people listening to this podcast that if you are in a home where you are a part of hurting someone else, you have the ability to work toward the goal of changing your behavior, to shift the tide of that home, to change everyone in its perspective, and to heal the home. And yeah. I think that's very important. You lost your father-in-law and it was devastating. It still is devastating. The grief you speak of is never ending. And I think you're right. When you talk about whether it's cancer or suicide, my wife lost her mom to cancer, I think now 15 years ago, but she still cries about it today like it was yesterday.
Mm.
Because just as you said, when you love someone that much, your pain is that great.
Yeah.
I think that's really important for people to remember.
John, I had one point on the communication style, because it's a really key point that you're bringing up here. And whether it's someone being a child being neglected at home or just any of us in society, we've lost the ability to communicate well. And so part of it's been, I feel like, weaponized against us from government and whoever else. I don't know. But like, bottom line is, they tell us not to talk about the hard things. They say, don't talk about politics. Don't talk about religion. Don't talk about your mental health. Like all this different stuff. Like, no, actually, we should be talking about that in a setting where we feel safe. And actually, how we do that is by what I think is like Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Habit number 5 was seek first to understand, then to be understood.
Mm.
And so that's called empathetic communication.
Yeah.
And that's the meaning behind that. And the whole point there is then I'm actually listening and trying to understand you, not listening to respond, not trying to get my point across, not being selfish, but actually empathetically communicating, trying to relate and actually understand where you're coming from. And if we did that, all these things would actually, a lot of these things could become a lot easier and better talked about, and we'd break these stigmas and all this different stuff. If actually they're teaching us in schools and teaching us in society how to communicate effectively, instead of telling us to shut up about politics, religion, and anything else hard to talk about.
That's a great point. Can you imagine a world where politicians listen to understand, not to respond?
What it's a really world. Hard to under like to imagine that right now.
I know, right? But can you imagine if we had a world where we took everyone's information and heard them? Because all people really want in this world is to be seen and to be heard.
Yes.
That's at the baseline of every human need. And mental health is the human rights issue of this or any time, because it connects to every other issue of this or any time.
Yes.
If you aren't good in your brain, you can't function in life. You can't be a good parent. You can't be a good father, a good husband, a good wife. You can't be a good mother. You can't give back to your community properly and let everybody find ways to thrive. The rising tide lifts all boats unless everyone is throwing you overboard. You know, so yeah. It's, God, what a great point you're making. Josh, besides the death of your father-in-law and the issues you had with your business being ripped out from under you unfairly and all of that, do you have any trials and tribulations that you have gone through and experienced that maybe you've never talked about publicly?
I'm like an open book. So that's actually kind of a hard question for me to answer. Like on my podcast, actually one of the more recent ones I shared is I had a gun held to my head at 13.
I saw that.
And I never even talked to my mom or dad about that. My mom like reached out to me. She's like, "Hey, you never told us that."
Yeah.
I didn't go home that night. I was, you know, scared and whatever. But no, I think the biggest, like, we're all here. We're not getting out of this life unscathed. I can't think of anything that's coming to mind right now because I'm such an open book. Those are the two biggest instances that have really, you know, shaped a lot of my adult life. But all of us are going to face trials and tribulations. And some of them are just little, but most of them are in our minds. And if we can wrap our minds around our thoughts and get centered around who has our back, which is God first and foremost, and then build a network of people that also care about us because we care about them, which is the baseline of it, right? You got to care for them to care.
Yeah.
And continue to get better and better people around you. And so I think that if we can continue to communicate, continue to care, and continue to build healthy, productive habits in our life, like exercise, like meditation or prayer or whatever is important to you. Like I said, like morning habit or morning routines are kind of buzzy right now or have been for the last few years. Having some sort of routine that gets your mind ready for battle, not only at the beginning of the day, but then at the end of the day, expressing gratitude and going through some of your wins. One of the biggest things I've done this year that I just took up was writing 3 wins from the day in a journal. I keep a journal next to my bedside. So we're sitting here in February, you know, I have over 180 wins already in my journal on the year. Wow. Right? And you could do 3 gratitudes, you could do 3 wins, whatever it might be, but it's capturing these little things, these battles you fought that day and won, and you're building a case for yourself that you are who you say you are. You keep these promises to yourself. One of the biggest baselines for self-confidence is I keep promises to myself. That is one of the basis of self-confidence. And then when you move from self-confidence, you get to self-worth. You get to self-worth, you can go to self-efficacy, which is the highest of the part there. So it's one of the things that people don't realize is that by them breaking promises to themselves, they erode their self-confidence and self-worth, which can lead to a lot of brain and mental anguish.
Yeah, because in effect, you are lying to yourself.
That's exactly what you're doing.
You're lying to yourself. You're saying, I'm going to do this for this. Let's just say, let's make up something. I'm gonna work out every day and do 20 push-ups for 30 days. And by day 4, you stop. And you get to day 30 and you've overeaten every day. You've indulged in, you know, unhealthy activities, unhealthy foods, and you've, you know, not to be weight conscious, but you've gained more weight than you sought to lose, and you feel lost and like a loser. It's actually common for people to take these actions and feel those ways because they've lied to themselves. So kept promises are very important because they set you up for success and for the idea that you can continue to thrive beyond that success.
Yes, 100%. And even if it's brush your teeth twice a day, you say you're going to do it, do it.
Do it.
Because yeah, those little things add up. And like when you go in the morning and you're like, I'm going to do this morning routine. And first, I'm going to do breathing exercise. And second, I'm going to get hydrated. And third, I'm going to go into meditation or prayer. Fourth, I'm going to get some exercise in. I could stack up 7 wins before I walk out the door in the morning. Think about the momentum that creates.
And when you write them down, you're putting them concretely in a booklet or a binder or a journal, and you can go back and go, I did that, I succeeded, and look, tomorrow's a new day, and I'm going to do the same thing over and over again. And yep, you just stack it up every time, and you end up setting the pace for a much more successful existence.
Yeah, we could talk for hours. I want to give the audience this example. The day I was terminated at before 8 in the morning. I got a call at 7:30 or so, and they were coming to town later in the day, and they say, hey, we got to town early. Can you meet us at the Marriott? I'm like, well, that's interesting. Not at the office, at the Marriott. So I knew kind of what was going on right away. But my point in that being, I'll save the rest of the story, but within 5 minutes, I'm done, and I lose everything. So we talk about, did I have a bad day or a bad moment? Okay, so most people go, oh man, I had a bad day. I could very well chalk that up to be a bad day. Now I'm 2.5 years removed. Let's go back in hindsight. At by 8 a.m, I had lost everything I had known outside of my family. I go down to the basement. I'm curled up. I had to take a pit stop, and I was bawling in a parking lot before I could go home. I go home. I tell my wife, and I'm curled in the fetal position in the basement crying. And she's consoling me. And so I could have, and I'm getting all these texts from and calls from people that, telling me how much I meant to them. And I would cry even further. And by noon, I had a tea time that day that was already pre-planned. It was June 16th. It was a gorgeous day. I happened to be golfing with my attorney that day. And so I went to golf with my attorney that day. So if I look back at that, did I have a bad morning? Yeah. Did I have a good day, though? Yeah.
That becomes a choice.
Yeah.
That becomes a choice. I was recently on a podcast where I said, if you are stuck in a situation that you can change through hard work, you are not suffering. That's a choice.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe you're suffering, that's a decision you are making. You can either decide to thrive despite your pain or sit in suffering and stay in potential failure.
Yeah, I could have stayed curled up in the basement the rest of that day. And I said, you know what? I happen to be golfing with my attorney. He needs to know about this. It's a beautiful day. As miserable of company as I might have been for that foursome that day, I went and golfed.
You showed up.
I showed up.
Incredible.
Yeah.
All right. Josh, let's round out these last couple of questions here. You have an incredible podcast of your own. I've had the privilege to be on it. What is the name of your podcast and how can people find it?
Spartan Leadership on anywhere you listen or watch. YouTube, Spotify, Apple, all the places, Stitcher, I don't even know half the places. I listen to it on Apple. But bottom line is, if you find Spartan Leadership, I couldn't believe the name wasn't taken when I got it.
Yeah.
So I got that trademarked now. But we interview leaders like Kevin in life, in business. And every once a month, we do a leadership and review, which is usually contentious and political. And I show people how to have contentious conversations about tough topics and still come out the other side as friends. You don't have to agree with me, but I'm telling you how to go about it and make your stance known and actually come out the other side in a contentious conversation.
That's incredible. And that's important for us to start doing because we need to have these kinds of conversations so we can move the needle forward.
Yeah, we do.
This is really important. I think this will be our final question. Josh, can you talk about your three pillars of life? The ones you leave, the ones, if everything disappears, you'll leave for your children. I believe they're never lose your faith in God, dream big dreams, and don't ever quit. Can you, in your own words, break those down and how important they are to you and your family?
Yeah. So my grandma Ruth died prematurely from a blood disease she didn't know she had. She essentially bled out during a routine surgery. And she happened to be a planner. Like just a life planner. She had already gotten, the cemetery plots, all that different stuff. But she also left us a letter. And she left us this letter. And I don't remember the entire letter, but here's what I remember of it. Never break the chain. And the chain she was referencing was, if we all believe in God, we'll all be together again. So everyone in our family, making sure that we keep that belief and keep centered around our faith in God so that we can all spend eternity together. And so that's what I remember of it, and that's what I passed to my kids. But also, just as the experiences that I've shared with you guys today, again, anything earthly can be taken away from us at any time. The one thing that we have as a constant is Him and His love for us. And so the closer we get to His word, the closer we get to Him, the more joy and peace and hope we have in our life. Not every day is going to be a good day. Not every moment is going to be a good moment. But if we lean back on our beliefs on that and go back to His word and how much He loves us, we'll be good. Number two, dream big dreams. I've hit a lot of big things in my life. And it's interesting to think I've achieved almost everything that I've set out to. I say almost because I always want to leave some room for, I don't like absolutes. So I just want my kids and anyone I have, like, go for it. Most people vastly underestimate what they can do in 10 years and overestimate what they can do in one. And so the point is to dream as big as possible, because here's what will happen. Even if you fall short of that 10-year vision, you're likely going to finish at 80 or 90%, let's say. It would have been way bigger. You're going to achieve way more than you would have if you hadn't set that big vision. And so thinking as big as possible, dreaming as big as possible, like fully committing to like what God's gifts, like he gave us these infinite depths to the gifts internally, each of us uniquely. And there's only ever going to be one of us. And so my whole hope is to, when I meet him someday, is to be at the pearly gates, and he's going to show me that image of who he created me to be. And not only that I recognize that image, but I know every intricate detail of the person sitting across from me, that I matched him trait for trait, word for word, and dream for dream, that I didn't leave anything uncovered. And so I want that for my kids and anyone that I have impact over as well. And then lastly, never quit is the point. Like, there's been numerous times in my life where I've fallen down and failed. And my point, even when my kids were just learning to walk, was, what do we do when we fall down? We get back up. And so same thing when I got kicked down the mountaintop, and I lost my business and everything else. And, you know, my kids, you know, I still wrote these quotes in my journal. I'm like, and like they were yesterday, Daddy, why are your eyes wet? Daddy, why aren't you in your work clothes? Daddy, did you get fired from your job? So I wrote down these two words when I was in my deepest of grief. I wrote down, they're watching. And I still can go back to that journal. Now I call it my pain journal, but it's like I can go back to that and remember the exact feelings, exactly where I was, and remember that I'm going to get up, because I have to show them the words that I was preaching to them, that I'm going to get up and I'm going to climb that mountain again.
Josh, this has been an incredible episode of the Hindsights podcast. Thank you for joining. Thank you, everyone who listened, viewed, watched, and subscribed. I can't thank you enough for being on the show. For everybody at home who's going through a hard time, who's struggling with brain pain, or who's struggling at work, whichever it is, or even with your family, or even with society, keep moving forward. Keep putting in the time, the effort, the energy, and the hard work for things to change. Suicide doesn't take the pain away. It only makes it impossible for things to ever get better. Make the choice to live so someday you can thrive. Whatever you do, friends, be here tomorrow and every single day after that. This has been another episode of the Hindsights podcast. Thank you for listening. Take care, be well, and be here tomorrow.